everyone who has helped as we kind of rolled with the punches this morning, making sure that we switched up some scripture readings. Donna, good job on getting all of those strange place names with basically like 15 minutes notice. And yeah, so I appreciate that. But lots of people have helped make sure that we got bulletins ready, that we got everything set up, that we just kind of, you know, were able to go as we went. And it's probably appropriate that we're having this happen on Pentecost, because we can trust that the Spirit's going to get us all the way there, that even though things are a little bit crazy, we know we're not alone. It's not just about us and our service, that this is God's, and that the Spirit will be moving for us as we go. So I don't know how many people feel like Pentecost is, like Robin mentioned earlier, one of the sort of big holidays of the church calendar. I think we're used to thinking about like Christmas and Easter, right, as those being those really high holidays, the ones that we put a lot of attention on. But Pentecost is often spoken of as maybe that third one that would get that same attention, because it's called the birthday of the church, like she mentioned. But for different people, sometimes that's a big deal and sometimes it's not. I really appreciate how Kenny and Sandy made sure we had a nice fiery red altar cloth and flower arrangement that looks wonderful to help get us in the Spirit. And some of us may have been a part of churches before where the sense of the ministry of the Spirit was a really big deal. And so, you know, maybe even you've been around places where they, you know, they speak in tongues or they feel like they're baptized in the Spirit. And so the remembrance of that first outpouring of the Spirit feels really exciting and is a really big deal. For others of us, that's not been our experience. Maybe that even feels a little bit strange. And so celebrating the Spirit can feel a little bit strange too. Like, what do we really do with that? And it may not even be regularly marked in a really big way for some folks. And so entering into that sense of why is Pentecost really important? What are some of the things that we can get from the Spirit, no matter what our theology is, no matter what our church practice is, through the whole range of ways that people think about the Spirit coming into our lives, what are some foundational things that we can learn from this first Pentecost? So the first thing I want to do is make sure that we kind of understand the background and context of what the early church was dealing with on what we think of as the first Pentecost, but actually it was sort of the first Pentecost of people specifically focusing on the Spirit of God as people following Jesus, but was not the first Pentecost. Pentecost is also a Jewish holiday. Now, Jewish people don't normally call it Pentecost the same way that Christians do now. Maybe it's because we've kind of appropriated the word a little bit. What you'll hear more from Jewish friends is that they're celebrating the Feast of Weeks, and that's one of the festivals that Mike read in our scripture this morning, one of the High Holy Days. And that has a few different meanings. And so the first one, why Pentecost? Like, what does that word mean? That has to do with 50 days after the Jews were freed by God from slavery in Egypt and started the Exodus. And so they got to Mount Sinai then, it's believed in tradition then, that it was 7 weeks, or about 50 days, after that initial saving in the Exodus. So Pentecost 50, from your Latin, right, penta, so that 50 days. And that has a lot of really important meaning within our Jewish tradition before that as well. So we have 7 days of the week, kind of like going back to creation. And so 50 days is like seven sevens. So it's this real sense of we've gone through a rhythm of experience, of struggle, of God taking us through something really important. And now we're in a moment to recognize that, to celebrate that, and maybe to find a new beginning. Another holiday that is less known, but that features this, is the celebration of the Jubilee. And so that was where, in Leviticus, God says you're supposed to forgive a certain amount of debts that people may have accrued every 7 years. And then after 7 cycles of those 7 years where you're giving some freedom and flexibility and new possibility to people, we go back and we actually set things all the way back to zero for people and give them that full sense of hope and opportunity in the year of Jubilee, which is the 50th year, the seventh seven, when everyone was supposed to be able to go back to their ancestral lands that God had marked out for people in Israel. And so even if fate and fortune and misfortune and disaster had befallen them, that God had put into place this way through these seven sevens of new hope, new possibility. So this 50 number is really important in a lot of different ways that even goes back to the Jewish roots. And then, as I said, they arrive on Mount Sinai, and they're given a revelation from God in the law, the Ten Commandments that Moses gets while being on the top of Mount Sinai, from God's Spirit coming and giving that law to the people. And we as Christians now often think of the laws maybe having some different meaning for us. We don't follow all of the law that was given to Moses. We often talk about, we've even looked in our letters with Paul in our last series, how the law takes on a new meaning when we follow God and follow Jesus, and that we have a new type of law from the Spirit, from the salvation of Jesus, where it's not about all the things that we can do to prove ourselves to God. It's not about whether or not we've put ourselves in a certain ethnic belonging or class belonging or status belonging where God thinks we're good enough to be loved, but that through the ministry of Jesus, through the life of Jesus, we know that God loves us and has given a path for us no matter what. But think about coming out of slavery, where you were not even treated as a human being. You had no rights under the law. You were barely seen as a person. For God to come and give the inspiration and say, I see you as having full dignity. I see you as having full value. I see you as having full humanity. And part of what that humanity will be is that you will have a law and a way of ordering yourselves, of taking care of each other when no one else would take care of you. Then that inspiration of the law suddenly takes on a lot more meaning in that first gift. And then, of course, the Festival of Weeks itself matches sort of the rhythm of the seasons. And so it's a harvest festival. And so the first things that you're beginning to pick as you grow, and now that we have the garden, we can relate to this maybe that much more, is also being celebrated. And so we're giving back what we have to God as a recognition that God has given to us. And all of this is wrapped up in the meaning of that first Pentecost for the people that came together, even that had not heard about Jesus yet. And so this is a moment that's full of meaning, full of reflection, full of possibility for everyone who's gathered there. And then God's Spirit comes in a completely new way, we see in the story in Acts, and opens up this whole new possibility of Pentecost and whole new meanings. But we still see some things that are very rooted in those same connections that the original Pentecost has. We see the sense of new beginning, that they've gone through struggle to have just seen Jesus, who they were following, have been executed, risen from the dead, and having some time that was probably still confusing to them with Jesus. And then Jesus is ascended to heaven, and we found the disciples locked away in a room, probably scared, like, well, is anybody going to believe any of what we just experienced the last 40 days? And a month and a half is probably not too long for the Romans to decide that they're not still mad at Jesus and want to hurt him or other people that follow him. What are we going to do? And so the idea that the Spirit would call them out, would give them a path, would give them a new mission that they could complete following the footsteps of Jesus carries that same sense of new beginning like we see in Pentecost in the seven sevens. The Spirit being given as inspiration mirrors the law being given as inspiration to the Israelites in exile, and yet now becomes not just systematic, but becomes relational. That God doesn't just give you a set of things that you can follow or understand to connect to God, but that God gives you God's very self, and that you're able to follow God in a more partnership, more relational, more understanding sense than having something that mediates it. And then we see the first harvest of a new community of believers, people that are being gathered by the Spirit, coming together. And while it's not a literal harvest like we have with plants, it's just as beautiful and full of the possibility of new life. As thousands of people, it says, first began to understand the new things that God might be doing and want to be a part of that. And that aspect of translation from how they were gathered all around might seem just sort of like a neat miracle, sort of, right? Like, wow, that's really great that they were able to connect with each other. but it has even deeper meaning than just that practical sense of, oh, yeah, they could understand Peter's sermon, and then they could decide to accept Jesus and then go off on their way. See, the need for translation was a reminder of the fact that Jewish people, going back even before the Roman Empire, which they were under at the time, going back to the Greeks and the people who came after Alexander the Great when he conquered the area around the Mediterranean and further east, going back to the conquerings of Israel and Judah that we read in the Old Testament by Babylon and by Assyria and by Persia, all of these people had been casting Jewish people from their homeland all over the world. And so they had been able to sustain themselves, sustain the practice of their religion, sustain their faith, and yet they had also needed to adapt. And so many people had gone all over the world, could not stay in Israel and in Judah and in Jerusalem where the temple was, and so didn't even necessarily speak Hebrew or Aramaic because they had been so entrenched in this new place. And so the gathering together in a festival like the Feast of Weeks gives some sense of hope that our faith perseveres, that God stays faithful with us no matter what. And yet also it's this reminder of all of the persecution that we have gone through, all the things that we have lost. The inability to talk to each other becomes this reminder of suffering and of difficulty and of challenge. There's that chance to connect with God, and yet every time you would cross somebody in the temple marketplace, in the courtyards, and you wouldn't be able to understand someone, it would be this reminder of the difficulty that you'd experience, the sense of disconnection that you might feel from your very identity because you had that language barrier. And so that God's Spirit would bring all of that together, not only is a practical help in the moment of helping people understand each other and understand Peter's sermon, but also is this amazing sign of what God is going to be doing through the movement of people following Jesus going forward. That God is going to be bringing together people who have always been separated. That all the forces of domination, of conquering, of persecution, of exclusion that have defined the Jewish experience and defined people who are trying to follow God for hundreds of years, God is going to be turning it around through the Spirit and doing something completely new and life-giving and exciting. That they're going to be able to understand each other. And not only that, that they're going to be able to form completely new communities full of love, where all of that division, not only from language and not only from ethnicity, but even from different past belief systems, as we've seen in the letters of Paul, that the mission of God is now to bring all those people together and to work back against all of those forces of separation, exclusion, and domination. It's an amazingly powerful first seed of all of those things that are going to be happening in coming decades. I don't know how many of you have traveled overseas before or maybe been at a tourist destination and run into people who are visiting where we are from another country and don't speak English, or maybe you have friends who have English as a second language or have run into non-English speakers, but you can probably relate a little bit, even at least to that practical connection of the miracle of being able to understand people across language. When you've been able to maybe make even those small moments, those small sparks of understanding, of relatability, of empathy, that's possible sometimes even when we don't have the ability to speak the same language. The experience that I had that was most specific about this was when Wendy and I got married in Costa Rica. We did like a destination wedding because we were trying to avoid hurricanes in Florida, which was good because there actually was a hurricane the weekend that we got married, so we would have had an interesting experience otherwise. But we had kind of the range of experiences of that language disconnect and that difficulty of being lost in translation. The most difficult example that we had was when Wendy was driving us between two places that we were doing on our honeymoon, and she got pulled over. We were in a long line of cars. She had this chance on a two-lane road, she thought, to like pull around somebody that was going really slow and get in there. But it turns out it was a very lightly painted or like faded and scuffed equivalent of a double yellow for us, and so she got pulled over. She shouldn't have crossed over the line. And I would imagine that actually probably the police officers that spoke to her could have spoken English. Most people in Costa Rica, especially that are in kind of public-facing jobs, are bilingual. But we didn't speak Spanish hardly at all. Wendy had a little bit more than me. And the police basically acted as if they didn't speak English at all. And so they were kind of just, you know, saying, you know, give us your license and you're going to have to pay this big fine. And they kind of, that's about as much as we could understand and made us feel kind of really intimidated. They actually ended up keeping her license and said that the only way she could get it back is if they went to like a court appearance that was going to be after we were supposed to have left anyway. And so we were like really worried, like, are we going to even be able to get back on the plane? Like, is our, at least they didn't take the passport, but you know, we were getting really worried. We were trying to express, like, what can we do? You know, not trying to bribe them or anything, but, like, what do we do here to solve this problem? Because it's not going to work. But they're acting like they can't understand. We can understand. And it just felt, like, really scary. And so it wasn't until we actually ended up calling somebody at the consulate or whatever there and assuring that we would be able to get on the plane and then we would just get a new license that we figured it out. So that was, on one hand, like the really difficult example of that loss in translation experience. But I also had some really beautiful moments with people while we were there where there were those connections, even if we couldn't speak to each other in the same language. One of the ones that sticks out to me the most is my brothers took me on like an adventure tour for my bachelor party before we got married. And one of our main guides spoke English really well, but a lot of the other helpers that were doing it did not. And it was a pretty intense experience, actually. There was an ATV section. There was horseback riding. There was a high ropes course. There was inner tubing down this river. And then it ended with us going in first these hot springs and then jumping straight from the hot springs into, like, 38-degree water, which is the weirdest experience for your nervous system that you could possibly – I can't even describe it. But if you ever have the chance, it's worth, I guess, just kind of knowing. But it's really bizarre. But in some of those things, especially like the ATVs and then also the inner tubing, I had those moments, especially of like the day before my wedding, like some of this looks a little bit dangerous. Like we went over like 8-foot waterfalls in the inner tubes and things like that. And I was like, you know, what's going to happen? Am I going to show up to my wedding in like, you know, a cast and crutches and everything? And Wendy's going to be furious with me for trying this. But the guys that were there were so encouraging. Were so kind, were so empathetic, would be right there and kind of show me without being able to explain it in words, like, no, you're going to do this. Like, watch how this happens, and we'll be right here, and everything's going to be okay. And just from, like, you know, them saying what they were saying in their tone of voice, whether I knew what their words were saying, or the way that they made eye contact with me, the way that they gestured, the way that they hung in there and showed that sense of recognition of, like, what was going on for me and feeling it and were willing to respond to it and not just blow it off, was this amazing thing that I think I would not have been able to get through that experience had they not been willing to do whatever it was they could, even beyond words, to help that sense of connection. And in some ways, having that experience, relying on those nonverbal, on those emotional, empathetic moments, actually helped the sense of bond and a sense of feeling support maybe even more than if they just would have said things that they knew. Oh, yeah, like these words help you generate, like, it's okay, right? Like, that's maybe helpful, but there's something deeper that we can communicate even than that and that they were really able to. And some of you may have had those same experiences. And that range of things for what it's like to be caught in loss in translation, where sometimes it's really discouraging and frustrating and difficult, and sometimes it can actually be really powerful and beautiful and encouraging, to me represents how God tries to hold together the two Pentecosts, the revelation of the law and the way that we have a system that can be really helpful but maybe sometimes feels like it doesn't do everything that we need, and then what you might call the spirit of the law, as an English idiom, the ways that we know that there's a value system, a heart that's underneath something that we use that means even that much more. And we see this in the law, even that God gives, like what Mike read for us today, right? If we read through a lot of Exodus or Leviticus or Deuteronomy, Some of it, as Mike was reading, he did a really good job, but some of us might have been like, this is weird. I can't connect to it. Like all this weird stuff about, you know, planting and harvesting and your enemy's ox and donkey and, you know, oh, great, like that's fine. But that's not what I'm going to read for my devotional all week and feel like God is, you know, really pouring into me. But actually, if we look for it, some of that sense of the spirit of what's behind it really starts to come out and brings that meaning of what the spirit and its role in our life can be. Even a better example that I wasn't able to include in our scripture reading today that kind of captures this tension of the law and the spirit and how the spirit moves in our lives. We hear often first in the Sermon on the Mount where Jesus says, "You've heard it said, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, but I say to you, do not resist an evil person." So he's basically trying to say, like, you've heard all these laws of, like, revenge, of evening things out that are negative, but I think there's a better way than you can do, which is really important. But Jesus also, right before that, says that he didn't come to take away even one jot or tittle, which is like one dot of the I or cross of the T from the law. And so somehow both of these things are important to Jesus, and where he would be quoting, at least in Jewish tradition, for eye for an eye and tooth for a tooth, is in Exodus 21. And it's actually kind of interesting. It's not just like just saying in general, like, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth. If somebody does something to you, you get to do them back, and that's the law that God lays out. It's a very specific circumstance that is mentioned. So it basically says that if a pregnant woman comes between two men who are fighting, and as she breaks them up, she is injured, and even more than that, the fetus inside of her is injured, that in that case is when you're supposed to give an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. And that's a very different type of thing, because we know that in that culture, the importance of women, the importance of children, what status maybe that woman was, if she was Israelite, or if she was a servant, or if she was a foreigner, would have meant that you would often have the excuse in that evening things out type of mindset to say, that person's not important. She shouldn't have gotten involved in the important men stuff anyway. So let's just ignore whatever her cause is. But instead, to have that value underneath it, that spirit of the law, that the people who are normally thought of as not being worthy of consideration, that they don't have the same value, that they don't have the same status, that those are the people that God's law gives recognition to, gives empowerment to, gives opportunity to. That's a spirit that we can see in the law and that can come out throughout the rest of the law and throughout the way that the law continued to be interpreted not only by Jesus but by the early church, that those ways in which we try to follow instruction from God, we root ourselves most of all in remembering those that the normal systems that happen in the world leave out, say aren't important, say aren't good enough, say my perspective can definitely be way privileged over their perspective. And so how is it, knowing all of these things, that we can continue to keep Pentecost alive today? Whether we expect the Spirit to come in and make me say some things that people wouldn't understand at first, or do a crazy dance or whatever it is that might be, or if you're like, I'm just going to go through my normal life, and that's not what my faith looks like, but I want to know how the Spirit continues to help my faith. I think the quote that Peter uses from Joel can be especially instructive too. We often do have those times where even as following God, not just wondering what's our treatment in a system of the world or by other people, am I going to be seen as valid enough? Am I going to be seen as worthwhile? And so do my concerns hopefully need to be lifted up by the values of God? But we sometimes feel about that self even for our own ministry, even for our own sense of living out our faith. Do I come to church and show my faithfulness to God by reading the Bible, by singing some hymns, by praying, by going to services? I don't know for sure what type of ministry I have. Maybe I don't feel like I can go out in the garden. Maybe I don't feel like I can do a big project. Maybe even having sort of like sharing my faith like Robin and Aubrey did so great for us earlier, like that feels intimidating too. Like, I don't know, can I be that outgoing with people? What does it look like for me to live out my faith? But the that Peter reminded them in that moment, that the Spirit is also to help us find our place that way, even when we feel like the young men in the quote from the prophet Joel, or those who are old and maybe feel like I'm kind of towards the end of my life. I don't have a role that people will listen to me the same way. People don't want to listen the same way. Or men and women, all of those range of people that have different statuses in the normal eyes of the world are lifted up by Joel as saying, God sees you. God's Spirit comes to you and empowers you. God's Spirit will give you a role that fits who you are to be a part of what is happening in the big picture of the kingdom of God. And so I think one of the things in particular that we can do, that we recognize how these same forces divide us, make it hard for us to have our own connections today. I think we can all think of times where maybe it's generational, where we have trouble connecting, maybe even in our own families or with our neighbors or with people at work or wherever it might be. Maybe it's not generational, maybe it's status, maybe it's race, maybe it's just life experience. And we know that there's so many things going on in our culture right now where all of those different factors feel like it's creating this completely untranslatable experience between us. Maybe it's not all of our relationships, but there are some relationships or some contacts that we have where, like, it doesn't really feel like a relationship. And we all have that opportunity, whatever it looks like, to ask God's Spirit to come with us and make those same connections, to help us see the spirit of what's going on with the person and not just the letter of the law of who we would have them defined as by other systems in our world and in our culture and in our society. That God's Spirit will help us, if we're willing to, set our own first fruits of the things that are most important to us aside, offer that as a sacrifice, like the Feast of Weeks, and say, God, I trust you that as I offer those things that are most important to me, that your Spirit will come and help me understand the things that are most important to someone else. That your Spirit will help that translation where I wonder if I could ever connect to somebody about this at all. Where there are so many forces in the world that say you're going to be enemies, or at the very least you're just going to be completely disconnected from each other. That the Spirit of God will come and can help you understand each other because you're willing to listen for the spirit of what's most important to that person. And God will help you empathize with it, understand it, and find those shared values. Even if some things you're still like, well, I might follow that shared value in a completely different way than you, but I at least understand that thing that's most important to you and can appreciate that. And I'm willing to see the dignity in you, the consideration in you that so many other people might ignore, and understand why that's so important to you, even if I might not do it exactly the same way you do. And that's something that we know our culture really needs right now. And that whether we have a big, giant ministry or we have a little better relationship with our neighbor who has a different experience than us, or our family member who we've been having awkward conversations with the last few years and is of a different generation, or whatever it might be, that God's Spirit comes for those exact moments and starts with us, at least in that foundation of understanding of translation, even over the barriers that we think in our culture are insurmountable. And that then when we start with those seeds, God will help us grow a harvest of love, of empathy, of potential, of ministry going forward from those moments of first connection. And that's a really powerful thing that Pentecost can do for us, even starting in small ways. I hope that we can ask God to help us find those in coming days and weeks.